Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers, all so that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every fan knows the right player in the right position can be a game changer. Put LifeLock between your identity and identity thieves to monitor and alert you to threats you could miss. Plus, with a U.S.-based restoration specialist on your team, you won't have to face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other losses from identity theft alone. All backed by the LifeLock $1 Million Protection Package. Change the game on identity theft. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 254. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is going well. It's still cold in South Carolina. I feel like I'm living in Maine, and I hate it. It was, again, my car was frozen this morning when I went out. It was sub 30 degrees, and I just don't like that. I'm ready for spring. I'm ready for baseball. And yeah, I'm ready for some more signings. We've had some fun trades. We had the Soto trade go down. We had the Kelnick trade go down, which I think we actually talked about last episode. I'm ready to see where Ohtani lands. I'm ready to see where Yamamoto lands. And I think all the dominoes fall from there. Golly, dude, why is baseball so slow with the offseason? NBA, it like opens at 10 a.m. and by 11 a.m., every free agent's already signed. In baseball, it's a sloth. It's insane.
Yep. I guess it helps this offseason, so there's more action later on. Like NBA, it's like all at once. Yeah, that's great, but then it's just like nothing after that. But yeah, no, I totally hear you on that. But you want to know how warm it is this morning, Chris, when I was going out to my car at about 7 a.m.?
I'm guessing it was probably in the teens.
Nope.
Lower.
6 degrees.
Yep, nope. I'm out.
our guest is like shaking his head and just like absolute disapproval. No, I'm not dealing with that crap. But we do have a guest with us today. As we do our dynasty catcher rankings here, obviously we did the prospect version of this show earlier in the week at episode 253. So if you missed that, go back and check that out. But when we were thinking about guests to bring on for various positions, my brain immediately went to this person for catchers. I think this person loves catchers more than anybody else I've ever met in my entire life. He is a writer and podcaster over at Prospects Live. You can find him on Twitter at @DrewIsOkay. And he's much more than okay. Mr. Drew Wheeler joins us. Drew, how's it going, man?
Hello, friends. It's so good to be with you. I appreciate all the kind words. Very undue. I would appreciate it if you took them back, but that's very sweet of you either way. The kind words about catchers. Yes, I liken it to this because I was brought into baseball by a catcher. My father was a catcher in college. Nice. And so I always think that he instilled in me an appreciation for all that goes into it. And so a talented catcher is someone that has so very much that isn't quantified in fantasy baseball.
Yep.
Catchers are wonderful in great positions, great players, great people, much like yourselves. And I do, again, want to say thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with you both.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. And I wanted to play catcher when I was growing up. I played mostly the corner infield, first and third. But I always wanted to play catcher. But you know, even nowadays, I'm obviously older now. But even when I'll squat down to like, do something with my kids or whatever, and I'll be like, God damn, this is why I wasn't a catcher. My knees couldn't handle that. But I remember back, obviously, Chris, you remember Jared Saltalamacchia, and because you guys had him on the Braves. He was the first one I ever saw do, with no runners on, the whole one leg out straight thing. Just because I was like, why is he doing that? And I was like, oh, yeah, to stretch out that damn leg. But he doesn't have to worry about anybody on base. So that makes a lot of sense. But yeah, my knees could not hold up a catcher. Like, nope. That's why I played the corners, and I was fine there. And they were fun positions, too, but. That's interesting though, Drew. I always wondered like how your love of catchers came to be, and that makes a lot of sense. Your father was a catcher. I totally get it. But all right, top 25 dynasty catchers. This will be a really fun show. Before we get into that though, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter again. Drew is at Drew is okay. Chris is at Rotoclay. I'm Eric Cross 04. Shows at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out all of the places that all of us. Again, Drew is over at Prospects Live. Chris at thedynastydugout.com, me at toolshedfantasy.com, along with Roto Baller and FTM. All right, let's start with our personal top 10 dynasty catcher rankings. And Drew will be referencing the rankings from the Prospects Live Dynasty 1000 they just put out. Drew, you want to go ahead and kick off the top 10 dynasty catchers from Prospects Live?
Yeah, absolutely, I will. Thank you for asking. So again, this is a list that we just produced. It came out December 4th, so brand new at Prospects Live's Patreon. I would be happy to tell you all about that if you are so inclined. But let's get right to it, guys. This is prospects, players included. So if you're starting a dynasty league right now, these are the 10 that I can recommend going from 1 to 10. Number 1, with a bullet in my opinion, it's Adley Rutschman. Number 2, Will Smith, the Fresh Prince of L.A., Number 3, Francisco Alvarez. Number 4, Sean Murphy from Chris's Atlanta Braves. Number 5, BCIB, best catcher in baseball, JT Realmuto. Number 6, boys, Samuel Basalo.
Ooh, okay.
Like that a lot. Number 7, William Contreras. Number 8, Ethan Salas. Number 9, Yainer Diaz. And number 10, Gabriel Moreno.
Awesome. Chris, how about you? What's your top 10?
All right, I've got same top two with Adley Rutschman and Will Smith. No surprise, I think that they are the top two without a doubt. And I think Rutschman is by and far the number one. And then 3 through 5 is William Contreras, JT Realmuto, and Francisco Alvarez. Those are all in a tier, so I won't complain if you want to move those around in any way. And then 6 through 10 is Gabriel Moreno, Wilson Contreras, Sean Murphy, Yainer Diaz, and Cal Raleigh.
I will say, before I say my 10, when, Drew, you said BCIB, I'm sitting here, I'm like, who the heck is BCIB? Then you're like, best catcher in baseball. Oh, okay. And that made some sense. But I was trying to figure out who the heck that was.
Glad I first. Could throw you off a little bit, man.
For a second there, but luckily you brought me right back by saying who it was. I was trying to think it was like some abbreviation or of initials or something like that. But, all right, my top 10 here, obviously Adley and Will Smith 1-2. I think that's pretty standard across the board in the industry. 3, I have William Contreras. 4, Francisco Alvarez. 5, JT Realmuto. 6, Yainer Diaz. 7, Gabriel Moreno. 8, Cal Raleigh. Big Dumper. 9, Sean Murphy. And 10, Logan Ohapi. So I think there's a lot of debate right now, and I played into that by tweeting about it and posting polls about it. So partially I'm to blame there, but William Contreras versus Francisco Alvarez for Dynasty. And if you look at the poll I put out earlier today from the Toolshed account, last time I checked, it was pretty close. Yeah, it's still very close. 50.9% to Frankie Alvarez and 49.1% to William Contreras. So basically 50-50. It's been pretty close all day. Obviously, a lot of people go to Alvarez because obviously former top prospect status. And Contreras was a good prospect in his own right as well, but not nearly the elite level that Alvarez was. But at the same time, you know, Contreras made a lot of good adjustments last year. That's great quality of contact there. For me, I lean Contreras here. Obviously, you guys over at Prospects Live, Drew, had Alvarez third and Contreras seven. I know that's a group effort. Do you also go Alvarez over Contreras for Dynasty?
It's so difficult because I feel like this is an instance where I would advise my patrons or my friends to do as I say, not as I do. Me personally, I would rather have Frank Alvarez. I think that the power is so attractive. I do think that we've probably seen the best of Contreras. I don't think there's another gear he can shift to where I do think there is still that likelihood for Alvarez. Now, in any standard redraft, if you're looking to win immediately and you don't want to take the risk on what if we've seen the best of Alvarez, I think Contreras is probably one of the best values you can have at any given point for catcher. Looking right now at his ADP at 85, roughly, that's incredible considering he's given you 25 home runs, 80 plus runs in RBIs each, really palatable strikeout rate and a walk rate that's not outstanding, but still really nice. The one differentiator I find here, though, is that Alvarez has, I'd say, substantially more power than Contreras does. I think that their output this year may be really similar, but I think that Alvarez's raw, so to say, is vastly ahead of where Contreras is.
Chris, how about you? Where do you side in this debate?
Honestly, I can see an argument for both. And as I said, I've got them all in the same tier. But you can look at the bigger picture to me. Obviously, Alvarez has more pop. I think that there's not much denying that. But I think Contreras just is the more well-rounded from a contact standpoint. I'm actually a little more confident in his ability, like his aging ability too. Like Alvarez's body kind of scares me a bit as he continues to mature and age. I'm not even sure if he'll stick a catcher long term, but that's aside the point here. Contreras still hits the ball hard. He had a 91 mile an hour average EV. His 48.7% hard hit rate was 87th percentile among all hitters. He's a disciplined hitter. He doesn't chase often, and he makes enough contact. So I see the more well-rounded profile with Contreras and kind of land there. Meanwhile, Alvarez, and we know he's got elite power. I think that he feels like he could be a consistent 30 home run bat, and there may be even room for more. He could, you know, be a 35 home run bat. But with the lower OBPs and probably the lower batting averages due to the amount of contact that he makes, I'm just a hair lower on him from that standpoint, plus the body you factor in.
Yeah, so obviously I go to William Contreras. I've been pretty vocal about that. And that's not a slight against Alvarez at all. But obviously, I still have Alvarez as a top five option long-term. There's all the upside in the world there. And I will, you know, say that if you want to go strictly on ceiling, they both hit their, you know, best case outcomes. Yeah, that ceiling is probably a tad bit higher for Alvarez. I do think, though, that I think their power is closer than I think others think it is. I'm a little closer. I would still give the edge to Alvarez. But I do think that the power is going to be fairly close moving forward. But the reason why I do is lean over to Contreras, a lot of things Chris was alluding to, that he just feels safer. Alvarez had some of these issues just making contact in the upper minors as well as he advanced up to AA and AAA. Last year, like, it wasn't just like one pitch type that he hit like a buck 60 against and he was hitting 300 against this. No, like it was sub 215 against all three pitch types. Fastballs was 213, breaking 211, and off speed 192. K rate was pretty high as well. Not terribly high, but he's been like the 26, 27, 28% range. And what really was impressing about Contreras was the fact that he improved as a pure hitter last year without sacrificing any of his quality of contact. Yeah, the home run total went down. Obviously, he only had 17 home runs in 611 plate appearances compared to 20 in 376 the previous year with Atlanta. But so, yeah, so the power total went down, but right, the
the metrics really didn't go down. Outside of the barrel rate going down, it's because he hits too many ground balls, 55% ground ball rate. So I'd love to see him get that up, but I just feel a little bit safer. Like, I think the upside is in a similar ballpark. I feel a little bit safer about Contreras, so I go that way. And another fun debate, though, that's, I don't think it's really a big debate on Twitter or anything like that, but I think these two players are going to be fun to debate just because of how they're both rising talents that kind of broke out in various ways this past year. One later in the season, really into the postseason with Gabriel Moreno, and also Yiner Diaz with the Houston Astros, who I don't think people realize like how good Yiner Diaz was. Like, pound for pound, he was like a top three offensive catcher this past year, but obviously he was held back because Dusty Baker loved Martin Maldonado. Now he's out of the picture, so hopefully the more playing time is going to be there for Diaz. At least that's the hope. They've hinted at that. We'll see if that's actually the case. But he finished last year 282, 308, 538, obviously more of an aggressive guy, so the OBP will never be that high, but 23 home runs in 377 plate appearances, 12.2% barrel rate, 44% hard hit rate, doesn't strike out much at all either. And then Moreno really got it going near the end of the year, hit 284, but his postseason performance has really been vaulting him up ADP for redraft and dynasty rankings here. So, Drew, where do you go with this debate? Would you rather have Yiner Diaz moving forward, or would you rather have Gabriel Moreno?
That is a tough one. And one thing I'll give these guys credit for, realize we're talking fantasy baseball, both actually incredible catchers as well.
Yeah.
You got to give the edge in terms of raw defense, though, to Gabriel Moreno. The guy, really good at catching base runners, good at blocking. The framing is not elite, but better certainly than Diaz. I also think that Moreno has a little bit more of a plate discipline than I would say Diaz has. But at the same time, man, you really hit the nail on the head, very much succinctly said it. Diaz was hyper-impressive from an offensive perspective last year. Looking at a 96th percentile X slug, outstanding. And then when you're looking right now at what he's projected to do, 21 home runs with 216 ISO, like that could be even more home runs than that. I think that's honestly a little light. Batting average at 273 is going to compare with what we're expecting from William Contreras. And I think you can safely get Diaz 2 to 3 rounds later than you're getting Contreras.
Yeah.
No, really like Yiner Diaz. That's a very underrated. I guess he's starting to become more well-appreciated, as he should. But and that I do like the debate as well. I'm curious what you guys make if you had to choose between the two.
It's cool. I have them back-to-back in my own. I do lean Diaz. Moreno, he's always hinted at that power upside. I think it's in there. And he showed it a bit. That game power is being tapped into more. I still think there's a bit higher of a power upside with Diaz. Obviously, the park, the lineup, obviously leans that way. So that's why I lean that way. But real quick, before I throw it over to Chris, so I looked on Fangraphs for all catchers, and I dropped it down to 350 plate appearance threshold because he was at 377. So I went to the threshold below him. So number one in WRC Plus was Sean Murphy at 129. And then there was a three-way tie for second. Wilson Contreras, Adley Rutschman, and Yiner Diaz was right there. And then William Contreras was 5 at 124. And Moreno was 9. He was right down there too. So I think flew under the radar just because he was only playing 3-4 times a week for the most part. It's how good Diaz was. And hopefully that can translate to 550, 600 play appearances this year. We'll see if he even gets that many. Hell, I'll take 500 at this point out of Diaz. So hopefully that's the case.
Chris, fellas, one thing I'll point out that I do find really interesting as well about Moreno, and Chris, you may be going to allude to this. I'm not quite sure. I'll assume you will. One really interesting thing that I've started looking at is if you take your favorite projection set, and Steamer's just the one I've been using tonight, and look at what a given player is going to give you in terms of a position's output. So for instance, of projected catchers, we're looking at somewhere less than 200 stolen bases. One thing that Moreno is going to do that is vastly underrated is he's going to provide stolen bases. Yeah. Moreno's going to provide nearly 4% of the overall stolen base total from catchers. That is something that can't be understated. There are so few catchers who contribute in that way across the board, and Moreno does. Chris, I don't know if you were going to say that, but that is something that I do really like about Moreno personally. Just to kick it in for you guys at home.
I love Moreno personally. I think that what he did down the stretch and in the second half was really good. I think the power is a bit underrated here in this profile. I think that there's plenty to come here from a 23-year-old that showed a lot of positive things, while also being a major plus behind the plate. Very strong catcher, very strong bat-to-ball skills. Contact rate's extremely good. Doesn't chase at all. He's going to post much better OBPs than Yiner Diaz is. And I can get the power, but I do think there's more to unlock here. And we were looking at a average EV near 90 miles an hour last year. The sweet spot percentage is a little low. Like, you want to see him obviously lift the ball a little more, get to some more barrels. But I think the best is still yet to come from Gabriel Moreno. Diaz is weird. He's an enigma of a profile that's able to chase at that kind of rate that he is, like highest chase rate in baseball, and pretty poor contact. He doesn't walk at all. One of the worst walk rate in all of baseball. Just had, despite having a 282 average, had a 308 OBP last year. Obviously, we saw a lot of power, 23 home runs in 377 plate appearances is pretty significant there. I'm torn on it. I think it comes down to team build ultimately. What do you need? If you're looking at a catcher, do you need more power? Do you need a safer floor? Like, Gabby's the much safer floor, in my opinion, just because he doesn't chase at absurd rates like this, and he is going to take a walk. He's going to get on base. But Diaz certainly has more pop. So just pick your poison on the negatives and, you know, take the positives depending on what your team really needs. So it's a good debate. I think it's a fair one, and I think you can value them similarly, and I would not be upset at all.
Yeah, and Drew, you brought up a great point with the speed element for Moreno. And even if it's 10 steals, like, he had 6 steals this past year and 7 home runs. So I think like a 15-10 type of season is very realistic with the upside for more power. So if he really starts tapping into that power, and what we saw at end of the last season into the postseason really sticks over a full season, maybe 20, I think 20-10 is in play. And while Diaz, I think, has the higher power upside, he ain't going to run that much. And while the contact skills have been solid enough to make that aggressive approach work, there's always that worry that sometimes that luck runs out, and you know, maybe the aggressiveness gets the most of him and the average dips 20, 30 points next year. So I think it's a really fun debate. I think there's a wide range of outcomes for both these guys. I do think Moreno is a bit safer and maybe a little more upside with Diaz, but yeah, that's fun. That's why I have them back to back. Like, I like them both a lot as well. It was really fun to see Moreno come into his own and have that big postseason for Arizona and that kind of magical run they had. So that was really fun to see. Another catcher here in the top 10, no more debate for right now, but it's a catcher that had a really hot and cold season in 2023, which I said his name a few minutes ago. That's Sean Murphy from the Atlanta Braves. Look at before the All-Star break. 270 plate appearances, 306, 400, 599 slash line, 17 home runs, 55 RBI, 17 doubles as well. He's one of the better hitters in baseball, not just a catcher, in baseball first half of the year. After the All-Star break, in 168 plate appearances, 159, 310, 275 with 4 home runs, and was one of the worst hitters in the league over that span. Chris, I'll throw it over to you first here. What'd you make of Murphy's kind of hot and cold season? Obviously, the metrics overall still very good. So are you just not ignoring it, but not really factoring in that poor second half too much into your evaluation of him?
There's a couple factors here, and they never come out and say it, but they basically played him hurt because they didn't have an option. Travis d'Arnaud was out, and Sean Murphy had a hamstring injury during that time. He never had a chance to recover from it. They pushed him through all season. Also, there's some rumors he had a concussion within there too, where they didn't really address that either, played through a concussion. So obviously the hamstring is a big thing. They, quote, ruled out a concussion. But I believe that Sean Murphy played that entire second half injured and under concussion protocol and never got better, because the thing with concussions is if you don't actually rest, if you don't actually take time to recover, it's going to stay. Like, when you're doing physical performance like baseball players or other athletes are doing, you can't recover fully from a concussion. On top of the fact that you're playing with a bad hamstring and the pressures and the wear and tear on the hamstring of being behind the plate, there's a lot of reasons why I think Murphy struggled. But at the end of the day, you said it, everything still looked really good under the hood. His barrel rate was one of the best in baseball. The average EV was really good. All the expected numbers looked incredible. The ball at ideal launch angles consistently. He doesn't chase, makes enough contact. I think Murphy is one of the best catcher buys for both redraft and dynasty leagues in 2024, because I think people are just going to look at the splits. They're just going to look and say, oh, he sucked in the second half. The first half was a fluke. Like, why should we buy into this? But there's always, as I always like to say, you always need to answer the why. Why did Sean Murphy struggle? Why did he struggle in the second half? And those reasons I laid out are why I believe he struggled. So that for those reasons, I'm buying.
Yeah, and maybe he's not first half good. Maybe that's not, you know, what he can do over a full season. But yeah, I'm definitely putting a lot more weight into that first half because, like I said, the metrics back up a lot of that. Like, you go to a Savant page, there's a lot of red, both in terms of, you know, plate discipline, especially in quality of contact, 16% barrel rate, 91.5 average EV, 46% hard hit rate. The approach has always been pretty damn good. I had the best K-minus walk rate of his career this past year. So just did a lot of good things there. Maybe he's not 300 hitter with 35 home runs, but maybe he's a 270, 280 hitter with 25 home runs. And that's going to put you right in that, you know, top five discussion. And maybe I have him ranked a little bit too low. But Drew, where are you at on Sean Murphy right now?
I think the kindest way to say it is that if you do undervalue Sean Murphy, play in leagues with me, because I don't. Chris, man, so smart, so wise, and I appreciate that you looked at the underlying metrics, not more than just the metrics, the why. As you said, again, very succinctly, very wisely, ask yourself why. And Eric, you touched on it as well, sir. Look at these numbers. Second best average exit velocity, best max exit velocity in the top 5% of the league. X-slug, highest of his career, top 5% of the league. Hard hit rate, 46%, call it. And then looking at the power numbers, first half, 12 homers versus 9. The slug went down, obviously, because his average went down, but the ISO only dropped about 40 points, which is roughly maybe 16 to 20% of what it was in the first half. I think that it might have, my favorite theory that I've heard, and this was just strictly from Chris, because I haven't really asked myself why what happened to Sean Murphy did. I think it's a concussion, because when you look at it, it's going to be a motor skill issue that might have been addressed by a concussion, because the average is going to drop, that things aren't happening, but his body is still in peak enough shape to hit the ball as hard as he was consistently. If he's reaching these career numbers and the power output, the certainly less, 12 versus 9, sure. RBI numbers, you could figure, have some sort of correlation to power. Somebody much smarter than me has probably researched this. The average exit velocity didn't drop off that much. I believe that's the answer. And if you're going to undervalue him because of a second half, then I think that you are setting yourself up to allow a league mate to have a boon at catcher. And moreover, when you're looking at a guy, I just think that Murphy's unreal. I think that he's going to give you tons of help across the board. Like you said, even if he's 20 home runs, and that's putting it very lightly, and a 250 average, those are still above average when it comes to a catcher. And then other numbers that he's going to give you are above average. I think he's being criminally underrated at the moment.
Yeah, like the floor is very high here. And if the floor is the kind of what he did the last couple of years, like you said, about 250 and 20, yeah, you'll definitely take that. And he's usually going to play more often than most catchers when he's healthy, obviously. And obviously, he'll be in a loaded Braves lineup where he played, let's see, I'm trying to like doing rough math here. Looks like about 70, 75% of his games in this past season were batting fourth or fifth in a loaded lineup. They need a little bit of sixth, a little bit of seventh. Even a few games have been the three spots. So a lot of guys to drive in front of them, a lot of good guys hitting behind them. So you get plenty of counting stats as well. But yeah, so definitely, I think I have a few spots too low. I'm probably have to update that. But another question I wanted to sneak in here, Drew, and I apologize, it's not on the sheet, but we already went into our prospect talk here, and I see that you guys at Prospect Live had Salo sixth and Ethan Salas eighth right there. What is your kind of personal thoughts on at the top of the catcher prospect rankings right now. Do you agree with having those two guys that highly in dynasty rankings right now?
Absolutely. Go figure. I'm really a big advocate for having catchers high. Let me load our top 500, our most recent, and I'll give you my like top five or six, 10. What do you want me to give? I'll get five or six. How about that?
Yeah.
I don't want to give away the goods here for free, but
oh, absolutely.
We can give the fine listeners of the Toolshed podcast a little something. So bizarrely, in our prospect ranking, Salas comes in above Basalo. I'm assuming that it's because Basalo is closer, that we have him higher in the 1,000. But just let's hit a couple real quick offhand. Top 10, Ethan Salas, Samuel Basalo, Harry Ford, Dalton Rushing, Jefferson Caro, Moises Ballesteros, Edgar Caro, Tyron Liranzo, Kyle Teal, Austin Wells. I think Austin Wells is a little overrated there, and just in a general sense, but that's okay. No harm, no foul. He's a fine player. I had a little bit more opportunity now. Irrelevant. Either way, I think Basalo is outstanding. He's looked every bit of what I think we're rating him as now. Over the last year, I think I wrote more about Samuel Basalo than I have about any player. Again, go figure. But Salas is unreal. I don't know what took me. I think I was until about mid-season. I was like, he's okay. And then when I watched, I finally was like, oh, let's watch him. So I watched some clips. That kid's going to be something else. Ethan Salas is kind of a dude. He's got a lot of riz, if you will.
There you go. We were talking about trying to fit that saying in here somehow. Very good. Very good.
What do you mean we were talking about trying to fit it in? That just came up naturally.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know. All right, let's move on here to the next set of our rankings here. We'll go 11 through 25. I guess I'll go first this time if I can find the sheet where I wrote it down. There we go. So 11 through 25 for me, I have Samuel Basalo at 11, Wilson Contreras 12, Harry Ford, Jonah Heim, Bo Naylor running at the top 15, 16 through 20, Luis Campuzano, Salvador Perez, Kiber Ruiz, Ethan Salas, and Ryan Jeffers at 20. And then 21 through 25, Mitch Garver, Henry Davis, Alejandro Kirk, Tyler Soderstrom, and apparently the only catcher in the world that Drew Wheeler does not like, Austin Wells at 25. Chris, what's your 11 through 25?
Yeah, Logan O'Hoppe checking in at 11, followed by Luis Campuzano, Kiber Ruiz, Samuel Basalo, and Henry Davis, who technically catcher-ish. He's going to go back to catcher this year. 16 through 20 is Ethan Salas, Kyle Teal, Mitch Garver, Jonah Heim, and Alejandro Kirk. And then 21 through 25 is Harry Ford, Sal Perez, Bo Naylor, Ryan Jeffers, and Indy Rodriguez to round it out.
All right, Mr. Wheeler, 11 through 25 from the PLive rankings.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
11 through 15, we have Cal Raleigh, Wilson Contreras, My personal favorite catcher in the game right now, beyond my Phillies, JT Realmuto, would be Logan Ohapi, of course. I would say he's underrated in our group list, but I'm only one of five. 14, I've got Harry Ford, and then 15, we've got Alejandro Kirk. 16 through 20, Bo Naylor, Henry Davis, who I'm a huge fan of, both literally and figuratively, Salvador Perez, Danny Jansen, Dalton Rushing. 21 through 25 have Jonah Heim, Kyber Ruiz, Ryan Jeffers, Hunter Goodman, big shout out Hunter Goodman, and Jefferson Caro.
Yeah, I like Hunter Goodman too. I saw Goodman, not to get on a tangent here on Hunter Goodman, but I saw him live several times when he came through Double A. And yeah, the power is legit. He had a lot of hard hit balls. We'll see. Hopefully he can take advantage of the thin air over there in Denver, because that's like a 30 home run bat in the making right there.
Can we get on a tangent about Hunter Goodman real quick?
Oh yeah, absolutely we can. Yeah. What do you want to dive into here on Goodman?
I just want to reiterate everything you just said. Folks are really not drafting Hunter Goodman like they should. In a league just this week, you guys might have seen this, I traded a Sal Stewart share for Ivan Melendez and Hunter Goodman. And with all due respect to my dear friend Smata, I made out like a fat rat in that trade. Big fan of what I got for this year and next. Sal Stewart's a cool prospect, but man, Hunter Goodman could really, there's a real shot at 25 home runs at a reserve round price and likely extremely cheap in your dynasty league right now, barring somebody in your league listening to us talk about him right now.
No, absolutely. And obviously, like, the one question right now is like, how long does he stay at catcher? Obviously, he played, you know, outfield when he came up with Colorado. So we'll see how long the eligibility kind of sticks. But yeah, the power is absolutely legit. I saw it firsthand several times. Yeah, definitely. Maybe not that could be the biggest average source. There's a path to him being like a, almost like a Cal Raleigh type. I think that's maybe on the higher end of outcomes, sure. But I think that possibility is in there. The guy that lower average, but just plenty of pop. Hopefully that has the C eligibility next to his name. But yeah, we shall see there.
Big shout out as well to the University of Memphis Tigers, mine and Chris Clegg's favorite college baseball team. Shout out. Anyway.
Wait, Clegg, you're in Memphis?
Sure he is. Guy?
Now I am.
I guess. I was like, wait a minute, this is news to me.
I'm giving Chris a hard time.
Yes, Chris, you're, wait a minute, are you South Carolina or Clemson? Now I'm
surely he's South Carolina.
Yeah, definitely not Clemson.
Yeah, okay, that's what I don't know what I was thinking with the Clemson, but I was like, anyway, South Carolina Gamecock guy.
I do live much closer to Clemson, unfortunately, but
that's probably what I was thinking of, because yeah, you can get there more easily than, where is the South Carolina campus? What town is
Columbia?
Oh, that's Columbia. Capital. That's right. Oh, Terry, yeah, that makes sense easily. Now, how far is that from you?
Hour and a half.
And Clemson is
20 minutes.
There you go, Chris. I got there no big college near me. The biggest college in the state of Maine is UMaine Orono, the Black Bears, and that's, God, best case scenario, hour 45 if you haul ass.
Jeremy Pena went there, didn't he?
He did. Yep, Jeremy Pena did go there. The pride of Maine. Not many others have come out of Maine. Though we do have one of the best, I know he's playing in Florida now, different sport, but Cooper Flagg, top NBA draft prodigy, is from Maine, grew up in Maine. Now he's at one of the big academies in Florida. But yeah, that's not many athletes come out of Florida, out of Maine.
I got to say, the pride of Maine is probably Julie the Cat Gaffney, the best goaltender of all time, right?
Yes.
Just going to throw that out there.
I mean, making that save against the Russians, man. The Russian team.
That's the Icelandic team.
Oh, sorry, the Icelandic. My bad. God, I'm
clearly, Chris, Eric has no knowledge of the Junior Goodwill Games from the early 90s, or else he would have known that Gunnar Stahl played for the Icelandic team.
He did, yes.
Sad.
I don't know what y'all are talking about. I'm guessing hockey, but
Chris, can't be serious right now.
The Mighty Ducks.
Oh, the Mighty Ducks. I was halfway paying attention. I'm sorry.
Julie the Cat Gaffney, Goldberg. Chris.
I'm sorry. I was halfway paying attention.
The best hockey player of all time, Adam Banks.
The Cat. Adam Banks.
I have
is
seen
so
the
far.
Mighty Ducks, guys. I have seen the Mighty Ducks.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
Well, we got to, like,
maybe not more than once.
Go back and
I've wasted a good bit of my life watching the Mighty Ducks, so I can't fault you for spending your time wisely.
As have I, but I have not watched any of them more than probably within the last couple of years. I'm feeling a Mighty Ducks marathon, maybe even this weekend. I think it's
likewise.
Due. I think it's due. All right, where were we? What were we talking
about?
So
we were actually talking about people that catch baseballs and not hockey pucks.
Oh,
we
that's right.
We're
having a baseball podcast. I forgot for a second
something
there.
Like that. Something
but,
like
that. Where were we? What were we? Jeremy Pena. I'm trying to like get back.
You were so you were about to you were about to ask us about breaking down the 11 through 25.
Yes, yeah, that's where we're going here. All right, so yeah, we talked some prospects. Let's go to Logan Ohapi though, because obviously, was it 13th in the Prospects Live rankings, 11th for Chris, 10th for me, and obviously, I know you are a massive Logan Ohapi guy, as you just alluded to. So I'll just throw it over to you. You know, what are you so excited about with Ohapi? How high do you think he could rise? Like, do you think this is a guy that maybe, let's say we fast forward 12 months, maybe a top five guy? Do you think that's in the cards there?
Yeah, it's. I'd say next year at this time, I think he's comfortably in everyone's top 10. Right now, looking at kind of his ADP, and I had a buddy of mine the other day sent me a screenshot from another Discord. He subscribes to multiple. He and I grew up together. Anyway, sent me a screenshot from another Discord where somebody asked if Logan Ohapi was a thing. And I, without thinking, had an answer typed out before my brain caught up to my fingers. And essentially, it all boils down to the fact that I think Logan Ohapi has underrated plate discipline, mad pop, not quite Frank Alvarez levels of pop, but mad pop, good power, is a non-zero behind the dish. I think the only thing I would permit someone to knock Ohapi on is that he plays in a cesspool. with all due respect to the GOAT Mike Trout and the corpse of Anthony Rendon, that's just a boy. That's a that of all the teams in Major League Baseball, the Los Angeles Angels are certainly one of them. And the thing with Ohapi too is that I think he'll probably split time as well. I'm not exactly sure with who, but I think the Angels are probably going to play him with kitty gloves a little bit, just considering his injury. But I think that when he's in the lineup, he is someone you should definitely have your eyes on. If this time next year, Eric, he was ranked consistently 8th and 9th. But then with further playing time to come in, say, the 2025 campaign, I think he could be a top five catcher. I believe in Logan Ohapi.
Oh, absolutely. Both Chris and I have been, you know, pretty big Logan Ohapi guys on this podcast ever since we saw him live out in the Arizona Fall League. Yeah, as you mentioned, the plate discipline, it took a little bit of a step back last year. I think he's got to take that step back forward this year. Like, it was very good and one of the better disciplined catchers in the minor leagues. And you know, he's got good pop, 15.6% barrel rate, 90.5 exit velo, 47% hard hit rate. How many home runs here? 14 home runs and just 199 plate appearances. So yeah, I think like he feels like a 260 guy in that ballpark, 25 plus home runs. Again, I agree, depending on the playing time there. And yeah, I wish he was still, like, if he was in that ballpark and that Philadelphia lineup. The Angels lineup isn't terrible, but man, especially with probably losing Ohtani, and then you don't have to worry about offending Rendon. I don't think he even cares. Like, I've never seen somebody care about baseball than in my entire life. Maybe I'm way off base, and if I am, I apologize. But yeah, it's like, take the money and run. Like,
yeah,
Anthony Rendon, poster child for that. But
if Anthony Rendon ever hears these words, then I'll shave my entire face, eyebrows included.
That would be, he's up plenty of times, not like he's playing baseball or anything anytime soon. But
if you are listening, Anthony, you can gladly donate to our podcast.
Yeah, but would love that. Donate to these boys. Speaking of donation, you guys and all your Logan Ohapi talk, the check is in the mail, fellas. Thank you both.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. This is definitely a pro Logan Ohapi podcast, that is for sure. Chris, anything to add on Ohapi there?
Not too much. I just have concerns about the torn labrum and what does the power look like coming back. That's my only hesitation, is where do the power numbers ultimately land? And I will say, we did see him come back and he did hit for power. So that's obviously a good thing. He returned last year sooner than expected and showed some pop. But ultimately, like, the labrum is just a weird thing. Like, shoulders are weird, like getting those kind of things, and you don't really know the outcome. But at the end of the day, Ohapi does a lot of things really well. He's young. He needs a new lineup around him. But other than that, he's doing everything that he can to do the lifting with Mike Trout in LA.
Has to now. He's one of the better hitters left in that lineup with Ohtani leaving town, more than likely. But moving over to the different part of the country, different country altogether, actually, with Alejandro Kirk from the Toronto Blue Jays, a guy that I still love a lot. I just love Alejandro Kirk, even if he did take a step back this year. Had a mini breakout year last year when he hit 285, 372 OBP, 14 bombs, and 541 plate appearances. This past year, slash line sunk to 250, 334, 358, 8 home runs in 422 plate appearances. Drew, he was still showing the elite approach, which has been, he's been right around like a 10, 11% walk and K rate each of the last 3 years. But the quality of contact did dip a good amount. You said the barrel rate dropped 5.2%. EV was down nearly 3 miles an hour from the previous year, down to 87.6. And obviously, since he's not a guy that provides any speed, he needs to be a guy that can, you know, provide solid average and some pop there to be as valuable as people want him to be. Would you be looking to buy low right now on Kirk? Because it feels like the perceived value on him has dropped a good amount over the last 12 months or so.
It has. And I honestly think that it's marginally inflated. Jordan Rosenblum, don't listen to this, buddy. I'm so sorry. I love Kirk because he combines two things I really love: solid plate approach and a person that has a C next to their name. But I do think that Kirk is probably a fine third or fourth tier catching option. If you have, let's say that you're just all in, sold out for power in a team construct perspective, Kirk is a great player to have because he's pretty consistent. I think that he could probably flirt with 300 seasons, theoretically, if he really is just hitting. The problem is that whatever power breakout we saw nearly evaporated. And I don't know that it's coming back. The approach is just so good that nothing would surprise me. I think he's undervalued currently, but I wouldn't go whole hog trying to get him. That's probably the best way I can say it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. In a redraft setting, I'd love him as like my C2. I think he'd be great in that option. So, yeah, guy, I think there's still some bounce potential. But, yeah, I'm really concerned as to, where did the power go? I thought it was legit. And I think he could bounce back in that regard. But to the level we saw in 2021, 2022, maybe not. But, maybe he's just like a good average with 10, 12 home run type. Well, maybe that's just what he is moving forward. But, Chris, would you look to buy low on Kirk in Dynasty?
He's interesting. You saw some major changes in the profile. His average EV dropped 2.5 miles an hour, which is huge. I think that factored into a lot of the issues because the hit tool's elite, walks as much as he strikes out. Contact is some of the best, if not the best, in all of baseball. Doesn't chase much at all. When he did make contact, the quality just wasn't good last year. Like you said, what happened? He's probably better than a 250 hitter, given the contact skills, but got to lift the ball a little more. Too much on the ground. I think that caught up to him. 50% 2022, 50.5% in 2023. So we saw that catch up. It's not a lot of healthy fly balls that can leave the park. That's really the biggest thing. And when you're not hitting the ball hard in the air, then you're not going to get the results. But he's a safe hitter, very high floor contact bat. That thing could rebound and hit 300 this year, but it may come with 10 home runs. And I think that's a question mark. So, like you said, he's not a heavy investment for me, but he is someone to consider in later rounds for sure.
Yes. So at what point do we ask ourselves whether the inverse in Danny Jansen is not considerably more valuable?
That's a good question. I think, with at least for me, with Jansen, I think the dude's just always dinged up. He's always seemed to be either missing time or he's coming back from an injury or not playing 100%. Because when he's been on the field, for the most part, the production's been pretty solid. So that's a good question to have. And I think Jansen's value is, I think because of the time missed, has dropped a good amount. Like, he was a guy that was like right in that mix in my last spot. He's kind of like that 22 to 28 kind of glob of my own catcher ranking. So, yeah, I think that's a good question to ask for sure.
The ADP is so razor thin between them right now. Jansen going at about 265 versus Kirk going at about 263. So they're right back to back with one another.
Yep.
And it is purely inverted. Jansen has miles better power, whereas Kirk is a tremendously better hitter. If we can figure a way to just mush the two together, boy, what a player.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I said that exact same thing. I don't even know if it was on this podcast or maybe even way back in the day on 5-2. I can't remember, but I feel like I said something similar to that. So it's funny that you said that.
I like you, Eric Cross. Good comment on your part.
I like you too, Drew Wheeler. All right, let's go over to some Luis Campuzano, who I think broke out, but very quietly, because obviously it wasn't like a massive full season breakout. But you look at what he did in 174 plate appearances, slash 319, 356, 491, with 7 home runs. And now Austin Nola is currently a free agent. And I wonder, with them acquiring Kyle Higashioka and the Juan Soto deal, maybe that they're going to let Nola go elsewhere in free agency and really gonna give the keys behind the plate to Campuzano. And that's the kind of thing. Like, that was kept him down a little bit in my rankings. Like, all right, is he ever going to play full time? Like, the potential's there. He was a top prospect several years ago. Feels like forever ago. He's still only 25. Feels like he should be like 28, 29 at this point. But he's shown flashes, bigger flashes last year, and now potentially has a big increase in playing time. Maybe even tripled the plate appearances. He could get up in that 500 to 550 range. And if so, I think there's a really nice breakout coming here. Chris, is that kind of where your mind's going? If you think that this is now his job to lose, so to speak, with San Diego, and if he does have a starter's workload this upcoming season, where do you think that he could land in rankings next year?
Yeah, I don't think they acquired Higashioka to be their starter, even a platoon or a share time behind the plate. Like, Campuzano's the dude. He has been for a long time. We saw them be aggressive and push him at a young age in 2020 before he was ready. Even in 2021, he was not quite ready, and they pushed him. But now he just turned 25, and I believe Luis Campuzano is quite ready for the task at hand to be an everyday catcher that has considerable pop in the profile. Respectable batting averages, too. He actually makes a lot of contact. Really high contact. He's aggressive, so he's going to chase some. So that kind of counteracts it. But I believe that there's some untapped power in the profile. And when you pair it with the fact that he makes so much contact, like, he could eventually jump like significantly. Like, if he plays regularly, like, he'll jump Gabby Moreno pretty easily and be like just outside the top five for me, considering the skill set. He makes better contact than Moreno does. He has more power than Moreno does. So what's keeping me from pushing him up that high? It's really just the need for at-bats. And I think he gets that this year. He hits all pitch types really well, which is a huge plus. Like, when you're hitting, you know, breaking balls, when you're hitting off speed, when you're handling fastballs, like, those things all go really well. And so I'm kind of betting on Campuzano. I think he's going to be a good value, and I'm buying him pretty much wherever I can.
Yeah, I'm already thinking I have him a few spots too low in my rankings. Like I said, I was holding him down a little bit because of the lack of playing time. But yeah, that play time is going to be there this year. So I think I'm going to move him up. See, I'm going to do a live on-air adjustment here. Like, he was 16. I think right in that 11-12 range, like, him or Basalo. I probably still lean Basalo, but I think I might put him right ahead of Harry Ford in my rankings. Yeah, definitely bump him up a few spots. Drew, how about you? You hop on board the Luis Campuzano hype train here?
I've been on for a minute, but I've looked off the train a time or two. You guys alluded to it, and y'all said so much good smart stuff there about how he was pushed and aggressively pushed, and how a lot of the value here in his kind of breakout was average associated. And I think that looking back over kind of his prospect history, we expected a good average, but I almost expected more power than what we saw once he finally came around. So theoretically speaking, if the average sticks with added power, or if the average slightly dips, let's say hypothetically he ends up landing around 250 and can get to that 22 to 25 home run level, then Campuzano is looking a whole lot like Logan Ohapi, who of course, it's hard because Campuzano has mad power as well. They're very similar boys that I like a lot. Another thing is, I definitely think Higgy was not brought into San Diego to be the starter. With you there, Eric, I think Campuzano is going to have as much as he can handle in terms of playing time, dish time. Speaking of as much as you can handle, if you're looking for a jump scare, ladies and gentlemen, go look at the roster resource for the Padres after Luis Campuzano. That's a jump scare.
That is true. Absolutely.
There are people here named Cal Mitchell, Matthew Batten, and Jose Azucar. Those are certainly people.
The top six in that lineup looks pretty good. Oh. But yeah, after bottom three needs some work for sure. I'm assuming they probably go out and get a guy or two. But I just wonder, like, when Salas is ready, which at this point will be next week, where kind of like how does that whole situation play out? Like, do they split time and then both play off the position a little bit? Some DH mixed in? I don't know. I don't have an answer for that right now. Obviously, they view Salas extremely highly. They bump him to double A as a 12-year-old. But you know, how is that going to play out? Because obviously, I think they've been pretty high internally on Campuzano as well. So I don't know. I want to see how that kind of plays out, probably more so in 2025 and beyond. But both very good players for sure. All right, let's keep this ball rolling here. Talk about a few more names, and then we'll get into some listener questions from a tweet we put out earlier in the day. I think I already know just from how the discussion we've had so far, these three names here for you, Drew: Andy Rodriguez, Henry Davis, Austin Wells. Can I give you your quick thoughts on this trio? Are you in? Are you out on any of these three? Indifferent? Where are you at on this trio?
Indy in, still in. Indy's good. He's a good player. I think he's probably your long-term catcher looking at Pittsburgh. Davis, hyper in, excessively in. Love Henry Davis. Think that he is probably an outfielder, first baseman long-term, but I've loved the hit tool since his days in Louisville. A batter that I love seeing and love seeing success from. Very in on Davis. Think he's very underrated. Wells, I should clear up something I said earlier. I like Austin Wells. He is, of course, a catcher. I think he also has talent. I think that Wells is just being, you know how people say that any New York prospect is elevated probably a little unfairly? I think Wells is probably a bit of a product of that. I think he's fine, but I don't also wonder that either Ben Rice or Augustine Ramirez are better prospects. It's an embarrassment of riches to be a New York Yankees catcher, but Wells is fine. Certainly my least favorite of those three, personally. And when I say those three Yankees catchers, as well as these three kind of peripheral or former prospect catchers, if I had to rank them, Davis, Indy, Wells.
Yeah, for me, I go Davis, Wells, Indy. I just think I'm just questioning where the power gets to with Indy. I think he's a better pure hitter than Wells, for sure. But I'm just wondering what the power output is there. But I'm not like out on any of these three. So Davis, my thoughts on Davis have been like so all over the board for the last handful of years. Right now, I would say I am more in and out. And they made the comments the other day that he's going to be, you know, at least catching somewhat in 2024, which is nice. At least he'll keep that eligibility for at least next year and hopefully maybe the first few years of his career. That'll be helpful. Yeah, Wells, I still think that there's solid pop there. I'm wondering where's the average end up with Austin Wells. I've tempered my expectation in that regard. Maybe he's more of a 240 type of guy, but it could be with 25 home runs over a course of a full year, and he'll probably play some outfield as well. So yeah, I think all three have kind of fair price tags right now. So I think if she value isn't super high on any of the three, because they didn't hit the ground running and wow anybody in their times with their major league clubs this past year. But so yeah, I'd be fine. I think the price would be fine on all three of them. But Clegg, what are your thoughts on these three?
I think Davis is a really good buy. I don't think people realize how good everything looked all around his profile. The under-the-hood data was really good in AAA, and then thought he was pretty good in the majors as well. The numbers don't really reflect that. He has 653 OPS, but guess what? Henry Davis went to Driveline this offseason. He's working out there, and that's a recipe for success. He's working at catcher. He's going to be going back there. Austin Wells is fine. Like, I think Wells plays up in an OBP format, but he's never really impressed me when I've seen him. Just a guy. And Indy, I still believe in the talent too much to give up on him. He's probably the most advanced behind the plate of any of these guys. Yeah. So maybe a better lock to stick, and the versatility allows him to get more at bats because he can play other positions in the field too. But the contact skills are really good with Rodriguez. And ultimately, there's still some power to be untapped here. Under the hood, it looks good. He just didn't really get to the home runs. So I'm betting on Rodriguez and Davis bouncing back. I want to sell Austin Wells if I could, because I don't think he's a catcher long-term. I don't think the Yankees believe he's a catcher long-term. And ultimately, where then does the bat fit? Like, how does it fit into, you know, fantasy equations if he's in corner outfield spot and just an average hitter? I don't know. If he can stick a catcher, it's better, but I don't truly see that happen.
All right, that kind of leads us into our first listener question here. We'll round up the show. It looks like 6 or 7 listener questions. So thank you to everyone that submitted those today. One was about Augustin Ramirez here from at Bronx Cards Fan. Ed from the Bronx is his name. Does Augustin Ramirez stick behind the plate enough to maintain catcher eligibility? I like his stick a lot, and he plays in all capitals hard all the time. Chris, do you think Ramirez sticks behind the plate long term?
It's a great question. They have, like Drew said, there's several guys, and I'm not sure any of them are their catcher of the future, to be honest with you, because Ramirez doesn't quite have the arm. He doesn't throw runners out. Last in double A, he only caught 2 of 22 stolen base attempts, which is not very good at all. I think he's well below average behind the plate, so I don't think he sticks there. But I'm with you, though. I love the bat, personally. I think he's insanely underrated, has really good pop in the bat, pretty good contact skills, too. So I like Ramirez, but I think he's more of a DH, personally.
Yep. So we'll I'm right there with you. Drew, are you kind of that same line of thinking?
Pretty close to there, yeah. Ramirez has a really neat bat. I don't know, guys. The more I think about this Yankees catcher thing, I feel like the one I'd want to invest in is Jose Trevino. And maybe if you're telling me to invest in a younger fella, Ben Rice. He looks like he's going to have more power. Your question, though, excuse me, Bronx Cards fan, was Ramirez. I like Ramirez. Probably a top 120 prospect without researching and looking at my list right offhand. Very strong bat, super impressive past year. Worth maintaining. At this point, it's more likely than not he moves off catcher just by virtue of the fact that he's a catcher. But until you're given a reason to believe that he won't be a catcher, trust that he will be.
All right, next question from St. Louis Perfectos. What about St. Louis vibe here? The first couple of people here asking questions. Basically, their tweet boiled down to, how much should I really invest in catcher prospects? Flipped a few in trades, but really struggled to see why/how to invest in catching prospects. Chase ceiling only? Drew, what are your thoughts just like on targeting catching prospects in general? Like, where do you fall in that spectrum?
I think that with anything, you just have to consider your league construct. Did Perfectos give a specific, or just do you want me to hit this from just a 30,000 feet view?
No, yeah, go ahead.
Essentially, I just think that if you have a two catcher league, obviously invest more. If you have a one catcher league, invest less. It all boils down to this. If you believe in a prospect, invest. If you believe in what you're hearing, what you're reading, what you trust, if you trust what Eric says on the Toolshed Patreon, invest. If you trust what Chris says on the Dynasty Dugout, invest. If you trust what Beck or any of Chris's dudes say, invest. They're all smart. Take what they say, what I say, if you're so inclined for whatever reason, and what you're seeing with your eyes, and then invest. I think that chasing ultimate upside is probably just a shallow way of looking at prospects in general, Perfectos, because the goal is to create that dynasty that the game is named after and to have the prospects that will be your upper elite level guys eventually. Now, at what level? Again, I think it all boils down to construct, but I think that there are catchers that deserve more respect in prospect circles than they get. But then again, that could also just be me talking because I love catching prospects.
Absolutely. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's knowing your league type. With prospects, I generally say just invest in the best player available. And we talked about it on our earlier episode this week when we talked about catching prospects specifically, but we suggested that 5 or 6 of the top 10 in our rankings were likely to move off the position. So people get so caught up in positions, I think, in their farm systems, but I could care less about my positions in my farm system because the majority of guys are going to move. With catcher, it is weird. And we see guys pop up all the time. Like, just looking at our list of top guys, like Adley, obviously, he was a rare enigma. He was a top prospect. So it didn't matter, like, whether you invested, like, if he was specifically a catcher or not, he was still going to be a top prospect. William Contreras was not a big prospect at all. Francisco Alvarez was. But then you have others, like, these guys that pop up all the time, like, I was in on Yiner Diaz like in 2021 as a prospect, but he wasn't really a big prospect name. Cal Raleigh wasn't a big prospect name. Logan O'Hoppe wasn't really a big prospect name. Luis Campuzano was a big prospect name until he wasn't. On the board.
The fatigue bit Campuzano for sure. You're right.
Yeah. Major prospect fatigue with him. Because he got brought up in 2020 and he wasn't ready. Yeah. So I would say of the catching prospects to invest in, I would say no doubt Salo, because the bat's just otherworldly and it's going to play wherever he goes. Ethan Salas is just a special talent. He's going to stick behind the plate and be really good. Those guys I'm comfortable investing in regardless of position. And the rest of them are for fantasy. Yeah, they're all right. But
I respect what you're saying, Chris, and I don't disagree at all. I would probably throw Harry Ford just based on his athleticism into that mix. But then once you get to that next step, even just looking at our top 500 catchers specifically, Dalton Rushing has first baseman written all over him in a sense. Yeah. Jefferson and Moises Ballesteros, that guy's got thighs thicker than my upper body. In all likelihood, he's not going to catch. That dude's got quads for days, but you want those quads, I don't know, flexing at first base or something, or just on the on-deck circle.
Yeah.
You're very right. I think people will get so caught up in what position a player is and trying not to overstack a certain position that they just get in their own way.
Agreed. I think we need to have a thigh showdown between Davison De Los Santos, who I deemed thigh master last year at the AFL. And I think he's got some competition there.
Oh, it's not even close though. Ballesteros is much thicker. Davison's thick muscular. Ballesteros thighs are not.
He's just thick like 8 C's.
Thick boy.
Oh yeah.
Thick boy. Absolutely. All right. So hit these other ones here as we're past the hour mark here. We got five more. See, the next one, I think we already hit on, which obviously Sean Murphy, but Jeremy Moore is asking, in a 12-team head-to-head keep 20 forever single catcher league, has the depth at catcher gotten to a point where planning to not keep anyone at catcher is viable? I kept Murphy going into last year, but I'm not sure the difference between him and what I could get is worth the keeper spot. It's hard to say without obviously knowing the other keepers, but in general, that's 12 times 20, 240. Yeah, I think Murphy's definitely a top 240 guy for me overall. I think without looking, he's probably more like the 150 to 160 range in my overall ranking. So unless you have a lot of good other options here, the depth of catcher is there, but we've seen it be there before. There's the ebbs and flows. It'll be shallow again in a couple of years. It always happens. Guys move off the position, can get hurt, get older. JT's not going to be around forever. So yeah, I'm totally fine without knowing your other options. I'm fine with Murphy and 12 team keep 20 league like that. How about you, Drew?
Full steam ahead. Keep Sean Murphy. Don't regret it.
3 for 3 with you, Clegg?
Oh, yeah. Certainly should keep him.
Thoughts? And I think we'll be in unison here for this next one. I think we already said so. Alex Meyer asks, do you think Francisco Alvarez can be a top 5 catcher? Yes, across the board here.
Absolutely.
Yep. Cool. That's what I thought. This one, will Kyle Teal make it to the majors this year? I'm going to say no, but I'm not ruling it out. I'd say 5 to 10% chance. I think they're going to give him a lot of time in AA, get him to AAA, and then he's more of a 2025 guy. Clegg, you feeling that too?
Yeah, the only caveat being I think they could bring him up in September just to get his feet wet. Yep. If the Sox aren't contending, then that will definitely be the case, and then they'll just vie for him being Rookie of the Year in 2025. But even if they are contending, he may be a better option than what they've got. So Teal's quite advanced behind the plate, and the bat's fine. So I'd say it's like a 70% chance that he comes up this year, but it may not be enough to be fantasy relevant.
All right. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I like that. Drew, how about you?
But I'm somewhere between the both of you. I think you both are correct in different ways. I think Chris is probably right that if the Red Sox fall apart, and boy, Eric, looking at this projected lineup is hard. #free Masataka Yoshida. But I don't know. I think he could come up, but I don't think he'll be relevant enough. And so then is it worth it? I don't know. I like Teal. He's outstanding. Great catcher. Great prospect.
Yeah, there's some potential with this lineup with Rafaela and Abreu and Duran. If they can take steps forward, obviously Cassis, but yeah, I want them to bring in a solid. Obviously, I want them to focus more on pitching. But I want them to bring in like a solid bat. I don't have anybody on the top of my head right now, but definitely needs another, probably more so a righty, because this is a very lefty heavy line, especially at the top. Like if we're going Duran, Devers, Cassis, Yoshida, which I think is a possibility, that's how it breaks down. They're all lefties. Yeah, we need a nice righty bat in there because we got Story, we got Rafaela, and that's really Connor Wong, but that's Connor Wong, so whatever.
To the credit of whoever it was, and you'll have, I think Alex was what you said the person's name was that asked the question about Teal. I think Teal is pretty safely the best catcher in that system.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And something like I mentioned in the last episode, I'm very high, and I think Red Sox fans are going to be very happy with Kyle Teal. Like, agreed. Red Sox fans get behind their catchers, Jason Varitek, Christian Vasquez. They get behind their catchers, especially if they're like a long-term option like Teal absolutely is. So I think he's going to be, on top of it being a good all-around player, yeah, he's going to be, I think, a fan favorite in Boston too. So, and I'm excited to see him. So hopefully we do see him. I'll see him in Double A nonetheless. So that'll be exciting to start my minor league season off next year. Second to last question here from the Can-Am Super Show, which I'm intrigued by that. Is that I got to look into that a little bit more, what that might be. But they ask, assuming MJ Melendez is catcher eligible in your league, where do you rate him going forward? And I had to look this up because I wasn't quite sure how many games he played. I know it was minimal to none. And I found that he played in 10, started in 7. So I believe off the top of my head, I'm not sure exactly what CBS and ESPN thresholds are because I played in those leagues last year. Actually, I did have one CBS league, but I forget what it is. I know Yahoo was eligible. Yahoo's like 10 games played, 5. And I know a lot listening. Yahoo's still a very big platform that a lot of people use. Melendez, if for me personally, let's throw a number out there. I feel he'd be in that probably the Hoppy Ford, like 10 to 13 range for me. I wouldn't have him above Murphy, Moreno, Diaz, any of them, but I think he'd be in that kind of third tier, so to speak, for me. How about you, Drew?
Looking at this data that I compiled just tonight, I think Melendez is being drastically undervalued, pretty substantially, as a matter of fact. I think that if he qualifies at catcher, I think you got a stud if you believe in him. If you think that power can play, looking at maybe 20 home runs, it's not a horrible lineup. And again, the steals are going to be substantial. That you're getting roughly, what did I say a minute ago, for 7 steals? It was something like 4% of the overall catcher steals market, which is greatly great value there. Across the board, you're getting solid value from Melendez if he gets that playing time. I like the safeness. I think Melendez, I'd obviously value him lesser than Ohapi, certainly lesser than your Sean Murphys and that ilk of player.
Yep, same here. Chris, how about you?
I think he's borderline. Top 10 to top 15 range is probably a comfortable place to put him.
Awesome. Yes, I think we're all in that similar range from the sounds of it. Last question from Bonkers99. Good name to end the show on. Better, we got to talk about these guys, but better young catcher for fantasy, Wells or Endy Rodriguez? It's almost a coin flip for me. I do lean slightly to Wells. I mentioned the better power upside than Endy. He's a better hitter, but I guess grand scheme of things, I'll lean Austin Wells. Chris, how about you?
I think Indy, personally, is a little more comfortable with the hit tool and the ability to be a catcher long term.
Yep, that's fair. Drew, how about you?
I'll shout out to mine and Chris's side life and tell you, Eric, the tribe has spoken. I'm going to go with Indy. I think Indy's more fun. He's the guy I'd invest in first, personally.
Did I just get voted off the island? Is that what just happened?
You did. You did. Okay.
That's fair.
You did.
That's fair.
It's been a fun episode of Tool Shed. Eric is gone. I'm playing.
Yeah, Drew just takes over hosting duties, closes up the show.
Never. I could never.
Yeah, for any, obviously, people don't know that before we started, the two of them went into a long Survivor discussion for a few minutes there, which I haven't watched Survivor. I used to love that show. I probably should get back to watching it. I don't know why I don't. But yeah, I felt a little left out a little bit there. But that is going to wrap up the show, though. Drew, again, thank you so much for coming on. Everyone should absolutely be following Drew on Twitter at Drew is okay. For again, very much better than okay. Obviously, got a lot of good stuff going on. Actually, I'll give the floor to you real quick. Obviously, you got your work over at Prospects Live. Get the Patreon. Like, what do you got? What are you working on right now? What's pumping out over there? And some of the things they could expect from the Prospects Live Patreon.
Sure. The Patreon is doing some wonderful things right now, but really our whole staff is working as a collective unit. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but we had our first book was published last offseason, the Prospects Live Scouting book. It's a prospects handbook, incredible stuff. This year, as a matter of fact, not only are we having real world baseball, but we have fantasy baked into it. Coming next spring, guys, I'll be published in a book, my fantasy thoughts. What in the world? blessings upon blessings are heaped on me. God is good, and that's certainly just a treat for me. So we're working on that. I've written up a ton of prospects. We're working on the Detroit Tigers right now. If Greg or Jordan or Eddie hasn't beaten me to him, I think I want to write up Max Clark. I know you guys are big Max Clark fans, and boy, that kid is gonna be a stud. Yep. So that's exciting. And anyone that's followed me from my fantasy kind of inception into this community knows that import players are probably the only subsect of baseball players I like as much as catchers. I have a gigantic article that I've just started working on, which will have kind of my thoughts and projections for Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Jung Ho Lee. It'll have Shota Imanaga. It'll have Yariel Rodriguez. It's going to have Eric Fetty might get thrown in there somewhere. It's going to be a gigantic article. And for whatever reason, our patrons over the last year, that was one of our top 10 most or best performing articles on our Patreon, was my work on Masataka Yoshida and Kodai Senga. And if you're listening from the Prospects Live Patreon family, I am working on that. And I'm so sorry that it's taken me so long. And I appreciate you asking. If you're interested in random weird baseball things like pondering whether the Angels might use Willie Calhoun as they use Shohei Ohtani, follow me on the Twitter machine as well. And more than anything, guys, please continue to support Eric and Chris. These are two of the nicest dudes in all of the fantasy baseball space and have always been incredibly inclusive and kind and helpful to me and to many others. You're supporting good folks by supporting them.
Thank you so much, Drew. And right back at you. One of the best people I've met on here. Definitely support everything you're doing. You're a great guy, a great analyst. So it was a pleasure having you on. Again, we very much thank you for joining us to talk your favorite position on the diamond by a substantial margin. Okay, as real quick before we end the show, catchers get eliminated. What's your next favorite position?
Pitcher.
Okay, there we go. That's fair. All right.
They leave a lot of pitchers for me to write up. I'm gathering. And I love a good pitcher too.
Okay. That's cool. I was going to think like catchers just cease to exist. Who would?
What a dark world.
I know. That'll end in the dark, but that is going to wrap up the show. Thanks to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you all enjoyed it. We will be back next week with our first base week. We got first base prospects early next week on Monday, and then the first base dynasty episode next Friday. But until then, everyone take care.